the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Well, Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to our first Lifetime Income Show of the Year.
And I'm Chris Prytower. 2018 is come and gone, and lo and behold, here we are in 2019. And this time of the year is usually when we make those New Year's resolutions. In fact, getting into physical shape, exercise, losing weight, taking off those pounds that you've gained during the holidays, new goals, ambitious undertakings. Maybe it's a planned trip or getting your financial affairs into order. We do touch upon health issues here on the program, but today's show is going to focus on helping to get your financial affairs in order. And that's whether it's developing a plan for your kids' education, future weddings, or maybe even your own future retirement. By the way, if you're retired, perhaps that's putting yourself into a better financial situation. And that could mean tweaking your investment portfolio, getting defensive with recent market turmoil, or updating your estate plan. So what we're going to do today, we're going to be covering a number of these issues and hopefully guide you on the path to a more secure financial future. And the reason why today's topic is so important is that according to a recent study by Capital One, just 49% of Americans have a long-term financial plan. Well, we want you to be one of them, whether it's a financial plan or a life plan for you and your family. So, Jim, where do we begin?
You know, Chris, let's start with some of the basics and just keep this simple. I want to start out with five simple steps before we get into things that are going to be more specific. Number one, you start out by assessing where you are. I mean, think of it when you walk into your doctor for your annual physical. What's the doctor trying to do? Maybe you've taken some blood tests and some other things, and he's basically wanting to see, where are you from a health perspective? Well, it's the same thing when you're looking at your financial health. So you start out by assessing, where are you currently? For example, how much debt do you owe? And if you do have debt, what types? Is it a car loan, a mortgage? Is it credit cards? And what assets do you own? What's your net worth? How much have you saved for retirement? And when you add it all up, all your assets and liabilities, just exactly what are you worth? Number two, and it is the beginning of the year when we make those New Year's resolutions, what are your goals, both short and long term? And this includes those of you that are retired. You may have specific goals or things you would like to achieve throughout your retirement. If you're working or you're just starting out in life, it could be things like buying a home, becoming debt-free if you have a lot of student debt or, let's say, credit card debt, establishing an emergency fund, and I'm going to have more to say about that when it comes to retirement, or, let's say, starting or maximizing your retirement savings if you haven't already done so, or how about determining how much you need to achieve your goals, whether it's saving for your kids' education or your own retirement. And then it gets down to create a budget that puts your money and helps you achieve those goals. I hate to say it, there's just no way to start out any kind of plan without a budget. If you're investing, any company that you invest in or a mutual fund, every company starts out the year, they have a budget. They have an income statement, they have a balance sheet, they have a cash flow statement. They know exactly where they are, where they want to go, and how they're going to get there. And then also, even if you have a plan, when was the last time you updated it? And you should be planning annually to review your plan. Where are you? Are you on course to achieve your goals? Have you fallen behind? Or are you ahead of the game? Just as you have an annual physical, you should have an annual financial physical. Now, these are just a few simple things that you can get started with to help you get on the right foot as we start out this new year.
Now, Jim, those are some good general suggestions, but let's get into some more specifics. Where should someone start?
Well, like a financial physical that you get every year, you should give yourself a financial physical. And that means, just as I mentioned, taking stock of where you are currently. That means putting together a budget and a financial statement that's going to tell you where you are right now. And the budget, I hate to say it, is the key. And in that budget, you're going to want a statement of cash flow, looking at, for example, your sources of income. Where are they coming from? Are there any other additional sources of income? What are your expenses? And hopefully, when you go through this process, there's a surplus that could be used for savings, reaching your financial goals from your own retirement to, let's say, funding your kids' education. It begins and ends with a budget. Without doing one, I hate to say it, any sort of planning is next to impossible.
Well, Jim, a few minutes ago at the beginning of the show, I talked about New Year's resolutions. Let's talk about setting up goals. What do you do when there are competing goals that need to be met? Like, let's say, putting aside money for a home. It could be college education, maybe a wedding for the kids, maybe even one's own retirement.
You know, Chris, it begins with setting up priorities. I mean, it would be nice to have four or five goals, and maybe you have the income, some of you do, where you can achieve all of them, but most people don't. So, for example, let's assume you're able to save $500 to $1,000 a month. Let's say if you're in your late 40s or 50s and the kids are all grown out, you might be able to save more, or even if it's a lesser amount. What you're going to do is you allocate the majority of those savings to the most important goal that you have. And then what you do is then lesser amounts to lower priorities or goals that are a long way off. Say, for example, you're starting out your working career and retirement at age 25 is probably 40 years away. So that's a future goal. Maybe you just got married and one of the first things that you and your spouse would like to do is eventually buy your own home. So an example is saving for a down payment on a home. Let's take a newlywed couple. They're just starting out in life. You're both out of college. And the most important thing is you want to start a family, you want to have a home. So the majority of your savings, let's say you're saving $500 a month or even $100 a month, the bulk of that savings is going to go towards your number one goal at this point, which is, let's say, saving for a home. And then you might have secondary goals if you started a family and maybe putting aside money for a college education. And then once again, maybe your retirement. Now, if you're in your 40s and 50s, the kids are in college or they've left the home, you're an empty nester, well, then you might be allocating more and more of your monthly savings towards retirement. And that would include maximizing as much as possible your, let's say, retirement plan contributions if you have a 401k, 403b, or 457 plan. And so all of this, Chris, it gets down to what stage of life you're in, your financial earnings, and of course, your expenses. But starting with a budget is where it all begins. It's no different for a household than it is for a business. Every business starts out the year with a budget. And if you are in the investment business or analyzing companies, you know, a company publishes three financial statements every quarter and then annually. They publish an income statement, so you know what the income and expenses of the company are. They have a cash flow statement so you can see if they're making money, bleeding cash. And then they have a balance sheet so you can take a look at their, let's say, assets and liabilities and assess the financial strength of the company. You, as an individual or family, should be doing the same, looking at where you stand now, what your goals are for the future, and then maximizing all the options you have available to you to help you get there.
So let's say that someone already has a budget. They've got that in place. What would be next in line that someone should be considering?
Well, once you have a handle on what your expenses are, your cash flow, your ability to save, whatever that amount is, I would look at ways to increase those savings. And you can do that by a number of options. Either one, by cutting expenses. Number two, increasing sources of income. For example, bettering yourself through education. Maybe a second source of income. For example, let's say you started a family and during the early years, the wife stayed at home and let's say raised the kids. The kids are now in school. Well, maybe the wife goes back to work and brings in an extra source of income. There really is no magic to any of this. It's hard work. It's living within your means. It's setting goals, staying on course and reprioritizing when necessary. And I like to give an example. He's one of my favorite clients and is just a good example of what planning can do for your life. And we'll just call this Dr. Smith. Dr. Smith is a doctor, and he's now retired. But when he became a client in 1985, we began with his father, who became my client first. We put a retirement plan in for his father, set up an estate plan, put a lot of his financial affairs in order, better prioritize things from income, tax planning, and estate planning. Well, the father referred me his son, who was a doctor. Now, the good thing is his father had done a lot of planning during his lifetime, so he was able to put aside enough money to put his son through medical school without taking on any debt. So I don't need to tell you, if you're a doctor listening out there, how much, you know, going through medical school cost you. I have a brother-in-law who took on over several hundred thousand dollars of debt. So anyway, my client was able to get through medical school without a debt. When he came to me, he said, you know, the most important things, he already had enough money, being a doctor, he had a house, didn't have any student loans. He said, there are a couple things. He had three children. He said, the most important thing is I want to make sure that my children have the same experience I did. In other words, they get a good education, and I'm going to put aside money to make sure they get that education. That's a priority. It's a goal. I don't want them to come out of college with debt like a lot of my friends that went to medical school. He goes, you know, my dad saved for me, and I was fortunate. When I got out of medical school, I didn't have any debt. So his number one goal was education. Second, since he had two daughters, he wanted to put enough money for their marriage as well as bar mitzvahs. And then lastly, his retirement. We did all of those, and eventually, as the kids grew up, went to college, the money was there for their college, so they, like him, went to college with no debt. The marriages were paid for, and we began to accelerate his retirement planning. In other words, putting aside more money. Now, here's something he did that many of you may relate to. When we got to age 65, his goal, he wanted to have $1 million for a retirement. Well, we actually had more than that. We had over $2 million, but $2 million doesn't buy the same thing that $1 million did, let's say, back in the early 80s. So what we decided is, he goes, look, I love to travel. I have a daughter who's married to a man who works for an oil company, and they're stationed overseas. A lot of these overseas trips that they wanted to take were going to cost a lot of money. So what he did, Chris, he decided he was going to work part-time an additional 5 years and use those dollars earned from working part-time to pay for all the expensive travel, the trips to Europe, the trips to Australia, South America, all those things that he was able to do. So he worked additional 5 years. And the other thing was, he just wanted to have more money when he retired so that he was secure that he could live well. And he also wanted to leave a legacy to his children. And he was able to do that by working to age 70. But here was a gentleman that started out his working career with priorities: education, then marriage, and then his own retirement. And we changed those priorities as every decade, as he got older and things happened, we changed it.
So going back to the budget, Jim, that just seems to be where most folks usually procrastinate. But assuming you go from there, how do taxes fit into this equation?
You know, the next step is to look at your taxes and know your tax bracket. Now, why this is important, and especially now with this major tax law change that went into effect for 2018, a lot of you are going to be thinking about filing your tax return coming up this April. And that tax law has an impact on Americans in different ways. So much of what you're going to pay in taxes now depends on what state you live in. You need to know what that tax bracket is, both for federal and state, if your state has an income tax. And here's something that will surprise you. We've talked about it in the past. Many states have an estate tax, and there are two states that have an estate tax and an inheritance tax. Imagine getting taxed when you die, and then your heirs get taxed again when they receive what's left. For many of you that are retired, you may not be facing estate taxes because of the recent rise in that estate tax exemption, which is about $5.4 million. But you may live in a state that has an estate tax, and as I mentioned, two states, Maryland being one of them, that has two taxes, both inheritance and estate. and the states that do have estate taxes start taxing your estate at a lower level of assets. Usually, it begins somewhere around $1 million, $1.6 million, all the way up to $2 million, and the estate tax rates run from 16 to 20%. A good example is the state of Washington, which has no income taxes, but Washington has the most progressive and highest estate taxes of any state in the country. They rise and go up to 20%. They start at 14% and rise the larger your estate and end up at 20%. I wonder what Bill Gates is doing since he lives there. For many of you that live in these high tax states, you may, depending on your income, may now be facing higher taxes as a result of the loss of state tax deductions, the cap on property taxes to $10,000, the limitation on mortgage interest expense now limited to a $750,000 mortgage on a new home purchase. So, Chris, tax planning becomes essential too, because let's face it this way. If you're trying to save for retirement, the more dollars that you can save in taxes just means more dollars you're able to put aside for yourself.
So assuming you've done all of that, Jim, I wanted to ask you about an emergency fund or emergency savings account. I've heard different amounts on what should be saved. Can you cover that a little bit?
Yeah, this is something that is becoming very, very essential. I know it's a big part of what we do in financial planning and retirement planning, and that is the cash you set aside to handle emergencies from anything like, I don't know, new tires for the car, a battery, unexpected medical expenses that aren't covered by your insurance, to repairs for a home, or quite honestly, saving for a new car. I'm going to suggest a new concept that you probably have never been told by your advisor if you're retired, and that is you should plan on a minimum of 18 to 24 months of living expenses to be held in cash in either a savings account at a bank, or my preference would be a T-bill, because they're safer, they pay high interest, and if you live in a state that has state income taxes, you don't pay any state income taxes on interest earned on, let's say, treasury bills or treasury notes. And of course, there's money market funds. Now, the reason for this is the ability to ride out a bear market without drawing down your principal during a downturn. And especially if you are on some kind of retirement plan where you're drawing down your assets on a percentage basis each month, such as commonly used in retirement plans on what we call the 4% rule. You take out 4% of your assets each year. Now, theoretically, if you live 25 years, the average retirement for both spouses, the 4% rule should get you through 25 years of retirement. Now, by having the money in cash to ride out a bear market, what this allows you to do is not draw down your assets and sell them during a market downturn. Imagine, for example, in 2000, 2002, or 2007 and 2009, when the markets were down 50 and 60%, do you really want to start out your retirement depleting your assets and drawing them down when your assets are dropping double digits every single year? Not a good idea. By having that cash cushion, this allows you the security and the means to ride out a storm when they hit, and we know they always do. I hate to say it, but the Fed and the government has not repealed the business cycle.
Well, the reason why I asked about the emergency fund or emergency savings is you had referenced 18 to 24 months of living expenses in cash, and you emphasized the T-bill. But wouldn't most advisors not recommend quite that much? Because I've heard it mentioned that you're better off putting that money to work for higher returns. Do you agree with that, Jim?
Quite honestly, that's pure crap when it comes to advice. I don't know a better way to say it. I mean, the standard rule is for people that are working is 3 to 6 months. But think about the last downturn in recession when the unemployment rate got to as high as 10%. A lot of people were put out of work. Do you think really 3 months is going to give you that kind of security? I even tell people that are working, you should have at least a minimum of 12 months worth of living expenses in the bank. That sure gives you a lot more options and time to find work when you know you've got 12 months worth of expenses in the bank. One of the biggest risks to retirement is going through a major drawdown of your assets during a major bear market at the beginning of your retirement. It could lead, Chris, literally to making you broke in your later years when you go to the three stages of your retirement, the go-go years, the go-slow years, which begin around 75, and then the no-go, go-slow years when you get 85 and beyond. I mean, imagine if you lose 40 to 50% in a bear market. Folks, it'll take you 100% just to break even. And think of those people that retired in the year 2000. For between 2000 and 2002, the market lost 50%, took them another 5 years to break even, and then in 2007 and 2009, they lost 60%. So for 13 years, if you were drawing down assets, you were drawing down assets in two bear markets where you lost 50 to 60% of your assets. This year, we are going to do something different on the program. We are going to introduce a whole new way of thinking about planning for your retirement, different than what you've commonly hear from the financial industry. The industry has taught you to focus on a number when it comes to your retirement. I'm going to teach you how to manage your retirement through the three stages of your retirement. It's more important about managing your retirement and a different way to plan for it. I'm going to discuss the various stages of planning, the tools available, and how to approach your retirement plan to reassure you you never end up in a financial crisis or end up becoming dependent on your children for financial support. We're going to talk about household balance sheet and cash flows and different ways to look at them. And I'm going to teach you something called flooring, which is essential to any retirement plan. We're going to talk about assessing retirement risk, risk management allocations, which become more important when you retire. And then we're going to talk about monitoring and updating your plan as your age, or, for example, if various things change in your life. You make a lot of money, you lose money, your health deteriorates, you end up having to take children back or help children out. I see this happen so many times, and they're the kind of things, Chris, they were not planned for, and all of a sudden they surface. What do you do, and how do you deal with it?
Jim, why is this, as I listen to you talk about just your perspective and how you're approaching this, why is this approach so different than the one that we see used by the industry, by the financial industry?
You know, if the financial industry focuses on what I call the number, because Wall Street is about gathering assets under management. Why this didn't work, as I mentioned, think of the year 2000 in 2002 when the market lost 50%. There was another thing that happened between 2000 and 2004. Greenspan brought the Fed funds rate down to 1%, a level we had never seen before, and gone was high single-digit interest rates. Then we recovered for a brief period from 2002 to 2007, and then we were in the midst of probably the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, where the stock market lost 60%, and even worse this time, the Fed brought interest rates down to zero and kept them there for 7 years. So imagine if you were concentrating on a number that Wall Street told you that you needed, for example, let's say they told you you needed $1 million to retire. You retire in the year 2000. The stock market is booming. Interest rates on $1 million, you could get 7 to 8%. In the next 2 years, those interest rates drop down to 2 and 3%. We recover only to go through another financial crisis, and this time interest rates get down to zero, and they stay there for nearly 7 years. So we live in a new world that is changing rapidly with technology, and there's now a better research and technology that can help you plan for retirement. One example, just in tax planning realm, is, for example, converting IRA or pension income to a Roth IRA up front or gradually over time to avoid or minimize RMDs, enjoy a retirement. I'm going to be sharing with you and teach you how to think like Warren Buffett, who pays very little in taxes given the size of his income, and why he's in a lower tax bracket than his secretary.
So, Jim, anything else before we close that you'd like to cover?
Yeah, one final thing is you want to prepare or update, and this is relating to estate planning, you want to update beneficiary designations. This is especially important if you have retirement accounts, for example, like IRAs or 401k plans, bank accounts to insurance and annuity policies. You also want to create or update your wills, especially if there have been any life or asset changes, or, for example, you move to another state. You also want to update end-of-life documents. This includes a living will, healthcare proxies, or powers of attorney, and you also want to prepare and find out if you are living in a state that is subject to estate taxes or in one of those states that have both estate taxes and inheritance taxes. Now, why this is important, I'll just give you a recent example of a case. We had a client who was ailing last summer, and unfortunately, he passed away in November. What we did is over the last couple of years, as his health began to deteriorate, we knew that eventually he would pass on. And when he did, his wife would be in a higher tax bracket because single payers are in a higher tax bracket than a married couple. She would lose her Social Security. She would gain his. So there'd be a loss of income. So we were doing Roth conversions. And so what we did last year is we did a Roth conversion on his remaining IRA. Now, a couple of things that did is it was going to make the income tax free for his wife eventually. And also there would be no more RMDs required of his wife, who would be in a higher tax bracket. We also converted some of the portfolio to high dividend paying blue chip stocks, things like utilities, staples, and healthcare with higher dividends. Now, one of the reasons we did that is because she would end up being a single taxpayer this year after her husband passed in November, she would be able to earn over $51,000 tax-free in dividend income every year. So tax-free dividend income combined with a Roth would put her in a tax-free environment in 5 years. And we also put the assets in a flex trust to take advantage of the higher exemption. We updated the medical powers, which really came in handy when he went into a coma, and also the powers of attorney. All of that got updated. So when her husband did pass away in November, the financial transition and the burdens on her were made much easier. So this is really a good time of the year to think about putting your financial affairs in order, but also your estate planning affairs in order as well.
Now, in the weeks ahead, we do want to let our listeners know that we will inform you about the latest technology and research regarding planning for retirement and how you can enjoy a tax-free retirement, which may be welcome news to many of you who have lived in high-tax states and have paid high taxes all your life. Now, on tomorrow's edition of Lifetime Income, we will have Michael Robinson, who is the co-founder and managing partner of Blueprint Insurance Services. And he'll be discussing a way to create a pension or a flooring system to provide a secure source of income throughout your retirement years.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we want to wish you a happy and most prosperous new year. And I'm really excited, Chris, about some of the things that we're going to be sharing with our listeners this year. We are going to take you to state-of-the-art planning, and we're also going to show you ways that you can create a tax-free income stream for the rest of your life or through most of your retirement years. So there are a lot of great things that we're going to be covering in the shows ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.